Roberts must be right after all. The weather is changing. The greenhouse collapse, or whatever they were calling it, probably is real, rather than just another attempt by still yet another government agency to tell him how to run his business. Convert all our models to electric. Ridiculous. It'll bankrupt us. Chrysler's gone, Ford's tottering on the brink, and now they want me to start making plans to convert to nothing but electric cars, and keep it secret until some leech in Paris says it's okay to announce the news. It's a ploy by those rotten Japs, that's what it is. They're way ahead of us on electric cars, and now they've got the GEC to order us to stop making gasoline-powered cars. Ordered us. Ordered me. And the damnable banks are going along with them. No loans for gasoline cars. Not even for methane or syn-fuel models. All fossil fuels are out, starting with the production runs 2 years up the line. Greenwell spent several minutes swearing in nearly infinite detail about the GEC, the banks, and his Japanese competitors. He had a choice vocabulary of curses, which he carefully refrained from using unless he was absolutely alone. Now he trotted out his richly profane litany from beginning to end, turning the air blue as he sloshed through puddles of acid rain. A crow cawed from high in the bare branches of a dead spruce. It was the only bird Greenwell had seen all morning. He scowled at it. The grouse and duck and other game birds were all gone. Dead or fled. That's gratitude for you. After the years I spent making this a sanctuary for them, not allowing anybody else to shoot them. Hydrogen. The thought made him angry all over again. We could modify our existing engines to burn hydrogen. The stuff gives good performance, and in some ways it's even safer than gasoline. But those foreigners from the GEC had stared at him as if he were insane when he offered to convert to hydrogen cars rather than electrics. Hydrogen, they had exclaimed. Too dangerous! The Hindenburg! When Greenwell had pointed out to them that Germany's Daimler-Benz Corporation had been running hydrogen-fueled buses for half a century without mishap, they just shook their heads. The decision has been made, Mr. Greenwell. You will convert to electric automobiles just like everyone else. There is only one GEC program, and everyone must adhere to it. But if we can make a simple conversion to hydrogen instead of having to go into electrics, Greenwell mulled the possibilities. Hydrogen isn't a fossil fuel. When you burn it, the exhaust is water. And if a hydrogen car can give performance like a gasoline car, we could run rings around the Japs and their dinky electric autos. But those motherless maggots won't hear of it. Electric cars are nothing. Damn them all to hell 1,000 times over. The crow cawed again as if mocking him. Taking a deep breath of relatively clean air, Greenwell put his rifle to his shoulder, aimed the laser sight at the squawking crow, and pulled the trigger. The camera built into the rifle's former firing chamber clicked, and Greenwell was satisfied that he could have killed the noisy black bird. He had never killed a living creature in all his life. Above everything else, August Greenwell prided himself on being a conservationist. Dan sat in his windowless cell deep underground, staring blankly at the electronic chess game his captors had given him. He had asked for a cyberbook reader with some of the classic novels he had never had the time to read, or a television set so he could at least see the news and try the opera channel to see if he could learn to enjoy something deeper than West Side Story. All they gave him was this stupid little chess set that had only 8 levels of play programmed into it. Trouble was, the damned machine beat him consistently on level 2 and higher. Dan's cell was bleak, bare concrete walls. One bunk, one toilet, one sink, and one table with a single chair. The ceiling was glareless light panels that stayed on 24 hours a day. Monitoring cameras watched him from behind those panels. He sat hunched over the chess game wearing a prisoner's gray coveralls. A team from the GEC was on its way from Paris to bring him back Earthside, where he would stand trial for kidnapping, terrorism, drug dealing, grand larceny, and anything else they could think of. Dan did not look forward to the interrogation he knew Malik would order. They'd want to get the names of the other renegades living around Alphonsus. Dan was determined not to tell them, but he did not know how long he could hold out against even the legal interrogation techniques, to say nothing of the kind that Malik would prefer using. "What difference does it make?" he asked himself, sitting alone in his bare, chilly cell. "George and Tucker ratted me out. Why should I protect them?" He pushed away from the plastic table and got up slowly. The cell always felt cold to him. "Must be my imagination. Certainly can't be damp down here. The only damned water around here is the stuff they make in the factories. Why hold out when they interrogate me?" Dan knew the answer. To screw Malik, not to protect George or Tucker or any of those bums. They weren't loyal to me, why should I be loyal to them? But if Malik wants their names, then I won't give them. The Russian son of a bitch can turn me inside out, and I won't tell him a double damned word. I hope. Dan had no doubts about his ability to withstand psychological pressure. But he also felt certain that Malik would quickly resort to more physical methods. For the good of the world's people, of course. All the heinous tortures in history had been done for the purest of motives, just like Torquemada working so hard to save all those souls by ripping apart all those bodies. "If only I could get loose once I'm back on Earth," Dan thought, as he paced the five steps from one end of his cell to the other. "I've got half a dozen bankrolls stashed away down there. I could offer a pretty hefty bribe for some help in breaking loose. Then I could disappear and live a decent life under an assumed identity. Maybe even some plastic surgery." He stopped short. "And do what? Spend the rest of my life sitting on my ass in Argentina or Taiwan, hoping nobody spots me? While Malik and the rest of them run the world straight into the greenhouse cliff?" He reached out his right hand and touched the concrete wall facing him. He pressed both hands against it, then leaned all his weight on them. The wall did not budge. "Who are you trying to kid?" he snarled silently at himself. "You're going to spend the rest of your life in a cell like this. Or worse, Malik's not going to let you go. And nobody's going to help you. Not Jane or Nobo or Kate Williams or anybody." Straightening up, squaring his shoulders, Dan told himself, "Okay. Let's face reality. There's only one possibility. Sooner or later, Malik's going to come within my reach. The damned, smiling, gloating son of a bitch is going to get close enough for me to grab him by the throat. Then I'll kill him. It'll have to be quick. Smash his double-damned windpipe before he realizes what's happening. Drive the cartilage in his nose up into his brain. Snap his neck. Quick. Then they can put me on trial for a real murder instead of these phonied-up charges." Dan nodded, satisfied that he was right. It was a discussion he had held with himself every day since they had tossed him into this cell. He came to the same conclusion every time. Now, as he did after each of those self-discussions, he got down on the floor and started doing push-ups. His first day in captivity, he could do only 10. Now he was up to 50. Next, he would do sit-ups to flatten his gut. Then he would jog around his cell until his legs were too shaky to carry him. He was on his 73rd sit-up, sweating and grunting, when he heard the beep-beep-boop of the door's electronic lock being worked. Too early for dinner, he thought. They had taken his wristwatch from him, but he had a fair judgment for time. The door swung open, and the huge shaggy form of Big George pushed through. Behind him, like a tiny spacecraft eclipsed by a massive asteroid, was Pops Tucker. Dan almost laughed, sitting there on the floor. "So they got you, too."
"Not fucking likely," said George in a near whisper.
"Get up," Tucker said. "We're taking you out of here."
Dan scrambled to his feet. "You're what?"
"We're springing you. Come on."
Instantly suspicious, Dan growled, "What's going on? Am I supposed to be shot while trying to escape? Is that it?" Tucker curled the lip at him.
"You don't trust us, huh?"
"Why should I?"
"Because we didn't give you away in the first place,"
answered Tucker, looking and sounding disgusted.
And we're risking our goddamned asses to spring you in the second.